Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the July 13th Board of Supervisors meeting. If you'd all please join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Say with me,
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you and welcome. Madam Clerk, changes to the agenda.
They're as follows. Amendment number one. Added item to consent, A2. Excuse me. Amendment number one. Added item to consent, A2. Request by the Clerk Recorder to appoint candidates to the specified County Central Committee or County Council in lieu of election. It's recommended approval. Added item to closed session, personnel. It is the intention of the board to meet in closed session to 15, consider public employee appointment for the position of Director of Planning and Building. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice is posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement. Amendment number two, added item to closed session, pending litigation. It is the intention of the board to meet in closed session concerning the following items. A, conference with legal counsel, existing litigation. 16, Oak Terrace Mobile Home Park LLC versus County of San Luis Obispo et al. Requirements of the Brown Act have been satisfied as this notice was posted prior to the 72-hour noticing requirement.
Thank you. And before we get started, I was made aware of the fact that Ms. Beth Woolen passed away yesterday, and she was a county clerk for 6 years. She retired in 1980, and she worked for the county for a total of 21 years. And in addition to her passing, I also found out that Ella Mae Butterfield, a long, long time resident of San Luis Obispo County, she passed away this last weekend as well. I would like to ask everyone for a moment of silence, if I could, and just say a quick prayer for the families and the thanks for all that they have done for our counties. Thank you very much. With that, we're going to move right into the consent agenda. I have a number of requests here. The first one will be from Kathy Collins on item A8, and it will be followed by Kim Daniels on A11.
Can we go in tandem? We're kind of sharing the same agenda item.
Sure. I'm Charlotte Alexander. I'm the executive director of the San Luis.
I was going to say, you don't look like Kathy Collins.
No. But Kathy works for the San Luis Obispo County Emergency Medical Service Agency as well. I've asked Kathy to spend a couple of minutes addressing this, your item A8, which is the STEMI contract with French Hospital Medical Center. I just wanted to make a note of this item because this is a first for San Luis Obispo County, the fact that we are designating a specialty care center in the county. This is pretty much the wave of the future in terms of taking better care of certain segments of the population and patients in our county. I wanted to underscore that this is a responsibility that a hospital has undertaken. It is a responsibility to the system, to the emergency medical services system. It's a responsibility to patients in the county. It's a responsibility to the EMS system as a whole. And we are grateful that a hospital was willing to step up and take on this responsibility. I wanted to introduce to you Kathy Collins, who will be the specialty care systems coordinator for the county and who will oversee the quality improvement process of the system. And as well, she will also take on the role of any other specialty care centers that are designated in the county in the future. Just so you know, this is the wave of the future. We expect that there will be a hospital designated as a trauma center in the future in this county. And beyond that, there are things like stroke centers that are happening statewide, and some other specialty cares as well. So I'm going to let Kathy tell you, share her enthusiasm with you on this.
Thank you, Kathy Collins, the MS Specialty Care Coordinator. I just wanted to say thank you for letting us be here, and it's sort of a milestone, as we were saying, in healthcare for San Luis Obispo County. Specialty care centers are the wave of the future. They're the best practices acts, and we were fortunate enough to take these best practices acts and put them forward into a specialty care center for a very specific group of patients called the ST Elevation MI patient, a very special group of cardiac patients. French Hospital and a lot of other people really put forth a lot of effort and time. It's not just French Hospital. We have interaction and representation from all the hospitals and all the players, pre-hospital as well, to come up with this program. And so I would like to say thank you to them in working in such a collaborative effort to move such an important program forward.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Kim Daniels on A11, and they'll be followed by Eric Green on A13. Good morning.
Good morning. This is regarding the new classifications within the probation department. The staff report says comparable positions in other counties were utilized to determine salaries. I'd simply like to know what the other counties were that were looked at.
Okay. We'll get to that in a moment.
Thank you.
Mr. Green?
Thank you. Good morning. I am Eric Greening on A13. This is a request for a contract with the environmental consultants for additional work on hydrogeology for the Laetitia Agriculture Cluster Project. To quote from the staff report, the county received numerous comments and concerns from both agencies and individuals regarding the long-term sustainability of the proposed water supply. The additional work was found to be necessary due to a lack of evidence of a long-term water supply for the project, unquote. Obviously, this is the applicant's choice to spend this money, but I just want to raise the concern that simply putting money into studies is not going to change the hydrogeological circumstances. If there is no evidence for a long-term water supply, it may be that the water isn't there, and spending the money obviously won't produce the money. What it does sometimes produce is a pseudo-argument for approval of a project, not on the content of the application, but on the volume of studies that have been done and the amount of money that has been spent by the applicant. I have seen just the information that a lot of money and studying has been done be effectively used in front of various decision-making bodies to get approval of a project. So I just would like to add a note of caution that the spending of the money itself by the applicant is not particularly wet, unless it actually finds something that is wet and hasn't been found before. While I'm here, if it's appropriate, I would be interested to ask, according to the present understanding, how many Class 1 impacts does this project have, or is it currently understood to have, and how many of those Class 1 impacts involve water issues? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greening. Mr. Wynn, followed by Judy Rodewald, please, on A20.
Good morning, Chairman Meacham, Supervisors. My name is Mike Wynn, and I'm from the NAPOMO and chair your Water Resource Advisory Committee. I'm also speaking to item A13, the proposed ag cluster subdivision at Laetitia Vineyard. The first water analysis that was done for this project said that there was sufficient water, but when it came to the RAC, we found a lot of questions about it that we couldn't resolve. And because we and others asked, you did authorize peer review of that study by Fugro West, who found serious procedural errors and they could not confirm that it was okay. And so you are going out now for yet another analysis, and it's certainly appropriate that you do so. I hope you'll take into account that this needs to be tested rigorously. This is not easy testing. There's no basin here. This is water that's in fractured shales, And it's always problematic to know how much water you really have in those kind of formations. I farmed for 2 years in fractured shales. I had 1,000 gallons a minute when I first opened my well, and I burned out the motor the second year. And a creek nearby never did start flowing again. It's that kind of thing. You simply, it's hard to tell what's there. The other wells, there are wells, part of the wells that are toward the south end of this actually do draw on the riparian underflow for Los Barros Creek. And I remind you that Los Barros Creek is one of the major recharge sources for the Oceano area, where we had seawater come in last year, and we will continue to have seawater come in more and more unless we have a lot more rain and we can bring in some safe water to help supplement their water there. Other of the wells do not draw on the riparian underflow there, but their overflow normally goes into the creek as well. And so I hope that that analysis goes further downstream than just looking at the immediate area of the subdivision itself. We in the RAC could not confirm that there is a sustainable water supply. We look with great interest to see how this goes. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Rodewald. Welcome,
good
young
morning,
lady.
Board. Thank you. Julie Rodewald, County Clerk Recorder. I'm just here to add a few final comments on the June 8th election, to thank all the people that were involved in helping us put that election on. Our poll workers, certainly, as well as the other county employees who assisted us, and the voters who turned out at about a little over 47%. We don't have a final statewide turnout yet, but I know that San Luis County will be higher than the statewide turnout. And also to put in a plug to voters that it's not over yet. Next Monday, we'll be mailing out vote-by-mail ballots for the August 17th election. There's still time to register, to change your address, or to request a vote-by-mail ballot for that election. The deadline for registration is August 2nd, and sample ballots will also go out next Monday. And yesterday was the opening of nominations for the November general election. So we're now taking nominations for over 35 schools, special districts, and community services districts, as well as the cities are processing nomination papers for their city council and mayor's races. So if people say there's no rest for the weary, there's no rest for the weary voter or for those that work in the elections until after November. Thank you.
Busy election year. Thank you. Thank your staff. I have a couple of questions here. That Tammy, do you have the comparable counties that on A11 that were determined for the salary thing for probation? Or Mr. Grant, do you have that?
I'll start. I don't have that exact information, but what I did want to just say in regard to this item, this is an item for the public consumption here. It's an item that reorganizes part of the probation department. It eliminates the assistant probation officer and replaces it with some chief deputy probation officers, and it does a few other things. But ultimately, what this does is save the taxpayer $236,000 a year because of this reorganization. So I just want to make that
okay.
Clear that this is, we're fully supportive of this move as it saves money within the department. Now I'll turn it over to Tammy Douglas-Schatz, the HR director.
Tammy,
thank you. Mr. Chairman, members of the board, I do not have that information right in front of me, so I'm happy to get it directed over to Ms. Daniels when we have it. I do want to comment, though, that regardless of what the other county information was, the internal relationships in the department were as important, if not more important, than external market, because the position had to sit between the chief probation officer and then the next management level down. So I will be happy to get that out to Ms. Daniels.
Great, thank you. And then on Mr. Green's request on A13, I don't know if anybody from planning is here, in regard to the Class 1 impacts. I don't know if that's been concluded at this point, but if somebody could comment at this point. Good morning, thank you.
Good morning, Brian Pedrotti with County Planning. We did have a draft EIR available for public comment, and there were a number of Class 1 impacts identified in different areas. But I don't have the draft EIR with me, so I can't give you the exact number. But my recollection is there were not any Class 1 impacts for water. However, due to some comments we received from both the public and agencies, we determined that it needed a little further study, and that's where this study has come in.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Mr. Panda, if I could real quickly, is there a rough timeline on coming to the point of releasing a draft EIR for its review period?
At this point, I'm not sure, because we will need to look at the technical analysis and then potentially revise sections of the EIR, I would say within maybe 60 to 90 days. That's a real rough estimate, though.
Thank you. Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Any items that you want to discuss or pull on the consent, Mr. Hill?
No, thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Sajjan?
No, thank you.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, quick comment on item A12.
And Mr. Gibson?
None for me, sir.
And none for me. Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Item A12 is a side letter to a memorandum of understanding with the San Luis Obispo County Employees Association, and the result of that agreement is basically further concessions that the union has made to allow 15 employees to continue working through this fiscal year. And I just wanted to thank the members of SLOCIA and Ms. Daniels for making that arrangement. It furthers a service to the public by these people that will continue to work for the current fiscal year, and thank you for making those concessions.
Thank you, and with that, I'd accept the motion to approve the consent.
So moved. Second.
It's moved by Supervisor Sajjan, seconded by Supervisor Hill to approve the consent calendar
with the amendments
as amended. Roll call, please.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. If you can introduce the first item, please.
We have public comment.
I'm sorry. Public comment. How could I forget public comment? I have a number of requests to speak on public comment. Let's start with Pamela Dunlap, please, followed by Gwen Taylor. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Pam Dunlap. I live on the Napomo Mesa, downwind of the Oceano Dunes. I'm here on behalf of an organization at this point has no name, but the state standard for PM10 is 50 micrograms per cubic meter based on a 24-hour average. And what we're finding is that that is not applicable to our situation, because we're only breathing these pollutants when the wind is blowing from the northwest, and the wind blows somewhere between 10 and 11 in the morning to 4 to 6 in the afternoon. So what we've done is we've downloaded, actually we have an IT specialist in our group, we've downloaded information from the ARB, Air Resources Board, website, and then he put it into an Excel format and condensed it into this sheet that we've provided for you today. The first pie chart, what we did is we took that 8-hour period, and then we took the values from the ARB information for that 8-hour period from the period of May 23rd to June 22nd, from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m., and figured out what the average PM10 level was for those 8 hours. It is substantially higher than what you see when you read it for the 24-hour standard. 43% of the time it was good. 7% of the time it was unhealthy for everyone. There were a couple of days where it was just outrageous over probably Memorial Day weekend. The second chart, we took the highest PM10 reading for a 24-hour period and put that on that chart. So 20% of the days in this month, the readings were good, and there were 20% of the days when it was hazardous. We had some readings of over 300 micrograms per cubic meter during those days, and that information can be downloaded. I also included a chart for you which kind of explains how the air quality index is colored so that it would correspond with this. Basically, what's going on is this was the worst spring on record. We had 10 days in that month where it exceeded the state standard. But we also had 10 times when it did not exceed the state standard, but there were huge values in the peak values in the afternoon. For instance, 114, 149, 139, 143, and 107. So what's happening is when we're out there gardening, playing golf, when the kids are out on the playground, we're getting blasted with these particulates. And we'd like to start looking at things more in this line and doing things on this basis than the other way around. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Dunlop. Gwen Taylor, followed by Lindy Owen, please.
Good morning. My name is Gwen Taylor. I'm a resident of Los Osos. I understand that there are members of this board that do not like repetition. Sometimes repetition is the only way that information can be gotten to you again and again. The board must realize the need for the protection of the Los Osos groundwater basin. The health, welfare, and safety of Los Osos is in your hands. Seawater intrusion must be controlled. It has reached an extreme condition. More water is being consumed from that basin than is being replenished. The rain is not replenishing it adequately. The ISJ is not the answer. The groundwater basin management plan is still in the development stage, and the requirements for the implementation costs are unknown. These costs are being borne now by the community by the increased rates without any cap as to the raising of those rates. There's no limit. The community cannot wait for the wastewater project or for the adjudication of the ISJ for action. Conservation is only a part of the needed equation to address saltwater intrusion. And an ordinance implemented conservation in the basin plan and a time specific for reversing seawater intrusion are all in your hands. Don't let the same situation happen that has happened for 40 years, which is an increase in saltwater intrusion. This is not a myth. These are facts that saltwater intrusion has been existing for 40 years and it is increasing rapidly. You cannot reverse it overnight. You cannot put a barrier up and say, reverse. Please take this into consideration and take action before it's too late.
Lindy Owen, followed by Ben DeFada, please.
Good morning, Lindy Owen from Los Osos in the Prohibition Zone. I wanted to first speak about the Duval Ranch situation and the county's efforts at ending homelessness. There are no efforts to end homelessness when you start throwing people out of the only working ranch that is helping people with drug, alcohol problems, as well as giving them housing. Now, if they want to live in a tent on that property, they want to live in a shack on that property, it is far superior than asking them to go live in the creek because the county has no facilities. I'm just tired of listening to the fact that there's more studies going on, there's more, you know, we're gonna solve this problem. If you throw the people off of the Duval Ranch, you are going backwards and you are announcing that you have no intention of solving anything. Then I want to move to Los Osos, where you're also proposing to move at least one-third of our community out because you allowed a non-competitive bidding process to go forward, which broke the promise that we voted for a 218 to give you $25,000 per household to build the least expensive sewer. When you rejected Lyle's Construction and the other bidder that said they would build a plant for us, and they were at least less at the time that the analysis was done, you cheated Los Osos. You took away our option for a more affordable sewer. Now we're looking at a potential of $50 million more to build the gravity sewer, which we know you're going to give the contract to Montgomery Watson Harza. It's the crystal ball is like so obvious. Anyway, And I think the county thinks, people in the county must believe that we're getting all this funding from free funds from the government. No, we're not. We're all going to be paying at least $300 a month by the time it's done. It's risen from $165 6 months ago. Now it's up to $181. Coastal Commission put a whole list of new conditions on because it's such a shabby, horrible project. So when those conditions get met, just jack it up another $10 million. This is not going to stop until you go back and give us a competitive bidding. And if by law you are forced to, I think that you're going to be embarrassed. I think you have the opportunity to do it on your own, as you should, as our representatives, especially Mr. Gibson should realize that that process could give us a $50 million savings, therefore we need to do it. They're looking at it in Morro Bay. They're opting to look at competition, and I really hope that you will still consider doing it before you are forced to. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. DeFatta, followed by Joyce Ellen Lippman, please.
Morning, Supervisors. Ben DeFatta here. I echo everything Mrs. Taylor and Owen said. Hope you had a good vacation. I missed you all. 10 years or so ago, those in power in Los Angeles decided to put in a sewer project for less than $50 million at the Midtown 11-acre site, a disposal site at Broderson high above many homes in the bay. It was to recharge the basin with 1 million gallons a day of treated water. Then the water board said no ponds near the bay. Overnight, it morphed into a gravity collection project for an estimated $80 million. Without any competition, Montgomery Watson Hardwick got the contract. And because of his squeeze play by Roger Briggs and staff in a county, you can't cross a creek with a sewer pipe supervisor. Montgomery Watson Hardwick bid went to $145 million overnight. LOCSD signed a contract, and some influential people secretly received contracts for several million dollars. Then the records were stolen. Well, all three CSD supervisors were recalled in disgrace, and the Midtown site was thrown out too. With the help of those in power, they saw to it that the CSD went bankrupt to boot. Since then, your supervisors have spent over $7.5 million for so-called studies pursuing a bad, expensive gravity collection project. You pursued the Midtown plant site above the bay, the now almost useless Broderson disposal site, the 642-acre Tunini ranch that we needed like a hole in the head, the use of spray fields to destroy our only drinking water supply, the now new cost of $182 million that could see no end to higher costs. Mr. Gibson is now asking for another $64 million loan at 4% interest. What kind of deal do you call that? And again, you're repeating to not look at much cheaper alternatives that would save us at least $50 million or more. Both alternatives would do a better job of getting rid of waste than his expensive gravity collection project. In each of the above instances, the public told you it was a bad idea, and yet you still went and did it again, giving him more money instead of firing those losers. Several times Gibson and Auburn have made major changes to this project, but for some reason they will not change the most expensive component part of it, the $50 million more costly gravity collection component. An antiquated system with a history of leaking pipes and sand dunes with over 900 manholes and a dozen pump stations right in people's backyards, practically. Gentlemen, what kind of rational thinking are you all doing? Right before your eyes, don't you see there is something very suspicious here? You're not going to get away with this kind of no competition activity where there is $50 million difference in a no competition bidding process. Coming January 1st, 2011, there would be many tax increases by all layers of governments.
Thank you, Mr.
Another way of foreclosure, inflation, more homeless, higher unemployment distribution.
Thank you, Mr.
Potter. The ripple effect throughout the county.
Joyce Ellen Lippman, please, followed by Eric Green.
How much more can be explained to you that things are bad now?
Good morning, gentlemen. My name is Joyce Lippman. I work at the Area Agency on Aging, and I'm here today as a member of the San Luis Obispo Budget Coalition. The reason I'm here this morning is to announce that we are having a March for Humanity, which is an action against the state budget proposals that will have devastating impact on local citizens, the seniors, the disabled, and those most vulnerable to the cuts that are proposed for healthcare services and social services in our community. I want to urge you as members of the of our community, and all members of the community are invited to join us on Thursday, July 29th from 5 to 7:30, beginning at Mitchell Park for a rally and a march to address the cuts that are being proposed in the state budget that are truly devastating. And I have flyers that Mr. Patterson was kind enough to distribute to you, and we have flyers outside in the hall on the table if anybody would like some. Please join us. This is a great opportunity to show our support for those that are most vulnerable and those that depend on us to make sure that they are safe and secure in their homes. Thank you.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes. Could you please provide contact information for those who are interested in participating in this event?
Yes.
At the bottom, Carl Hansen.
Ah, yes, the printer's getting smaller as I look at it, I regret to say. Carl can be reached at 238-4664, or Jerry Mahale, who's with the Tri-County's Independent Living Resource Center, at 462-1162. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Green, followed by Al Barrow.
Thank you. My speech just got a little bit shorter because I was actually planning to make the same announcement that was just made. As you know, I'm often up here trying to encourage us to take advantage of any opportunity to make a difference relative to the state budget process, and this is such an opportunity. And I would particularly like to thank Supervisor Patterson for being a co-sponsor and for being present, or intending to be present, at this event, again on July 29th, beginning at 5 o'clock in Mitchell Park and including a march through the farmers market and then back to Mitchell Park. Another opportunity that we will have to make a difference in the state budget process is, unlike any other part of the state, those of us who live in Senatorial District 15 will have a chance to participate in an election during the summer when the legislature is likely to be deadlocked. And so by studying the different proposals that are out there and the proposals supported by various candidates for state senate, we have a chance not only to fill a voting seat on the state senate, but to give a statewide signal relative to our own priorities. So let none of us forget that we do have another election on August 17th, and Ms. Rodewald was just talking about sending out of the sample ballots and by-mail ballots. They will be small. They won't be hefty like ballots usually are, so be vigilant. Don't just put it with the junk mail. It's something important, and it's coming. So we have these opportunities. Again, the March for Humanity on Thursday the 29th at 5 o'clock, and voting in or prior to the August 17th senatorial election. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Barrow, followed by Elaine Watson, please.
Good morning. Thank you. My name is Al Barrow, Coalition for Low Income Housing. We are a California Public Benefit Corporation and primarily advocate low-income housing and issues that relate to people who are having challenges staying in their housing or achieving housing. And the California legislature has stated that that's one of the primary concerns for the state, is for all of our citizens to have decent and affordable housing. Many people are losing their housing. 1 million people have lost their homes in California last year, gone, foreclosed. Many more people are underwater now. They have no value in their homes, but they have mortgages and debts, and they're trying to refinance their housing to stay in their homes. This morning, I walked out in my patio, and I looked across the next lot where there was a triplex, and a lady in the front unit was weeping on her porch because she had lost her housing and she was moving out. And we see thousands of these stories, and they're increasing all the time. So we need to get our homeless shelter going and try to get I think is upward now, moving towards 5,000 people that are chronically homeless in the county right now. And we need to see if we can at least get the families with children into housing somehow. It's just impossible to raise a family and educate them when they're living in a car or in bushes. The Los Osos project, if I can move over to that one, is going to impact our community even more severely than this terrible economy has done. The $300 a month that Lindy Owen mentioned and Mr. DeFatis' comments about more affordable opportunities, I would like to add that the county financing approach to this project has added another $50 million to the cost of the project. To call a 4% 40-year loan an affordable loan when the state, when the federal window is 0.25%. In other words, banks can get money at 0.25% or less sometimes from the federal government. The state revolving fund loan is presently at 2.7%. That's without any benefits to our community, which is having to shoulder the most expensive sewer probably in the United States per capita. $250, $300 million is ridiculous. None of you pay that much.
Thank you, Mr. Burrow.
Thank you very much.
Thank you for your time. Ms. Watson, followed by Richard Margeson. It's my last request to speak.
Good morning. Elaine Watson, Los Osos. This is a component of what Mr. Barrow was just talking about. We know from the project description and the fine and rough screening reports that the cost to decommission a septic tank in Los Osos is identified to be $300 per tank. There's no way that $300 can possibly cover the cost to locate the tank, uncover the lid, some of which are buried fairly deep, pump the tank, punch a hole in the bottom if it isn't going to be used for gray water, crush the lid, and then backfill it with sand or gravel. The pumping alone for a small tank is $300. Uncovering a septic tank lid requires either man hours or a backhoe. Jackhammering a hole into the bottom and crushing the lid both require heavy equipment. Do you really believe that $300 will also cover the cost to load, transport, and unload enough gravel or sand to fill a 1,200-gallon tank? What about sourcing this much material for all the septic tanks in the Prohibition Zone? Where will all of this material be stored? What about sourcing this material? How much will the price of the material escalate given the necessity and the demand? If the existing septic is used for gray water, what will it cost to do all of the above except backfill, plus also pay for to disinfect the tank, provide a lid, and possibly install a pump to use for irrigation? George and Gwen Taylor recently had two septic tanks pumped, and he did negotiate $300 per tank. However, George located and dug the tanks himself so that the pumper only had to insert the hose and pump. George then recovered the tank himself. Again, he did pay $300 to pump each tank, but he put in all the time and labor to do all the rest of it. It's time to get down to the realistic financial impacts on this community. Homeowners have to have accurate cost figures in order to begin to figure out how they're going to pay or finance for all of these out-of-pocket expenses. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Watson. Mr. Markinson?
Good morning.
Morning.
Richard Margeson. I'm going to jump all over the place this morning. I wasn't going to make a comment about what's happening with Mr. Duvall, but after the earlier comment, for me, I think the first go-around with the county, I don't think the county made the best effort to reconcile this situation. But this last round of efforts, I have no qualm in saying that I think the county made every effort to try to help Mr. Duvall, to try to rectify this situation. And those sheds are not safe for people to live in. And I don't know if the listening public knows, but when those were built, They were sealed with crankcase oil. They were never going to get an approval from the fire marshal for habitation. They were tinder boxes. They were not safe for people to live in. I hope it all works out for him. I hope he comes to his senses and wants to make this work, because I think it does serve a need, what he's trying to do out there. But at some point, there's got to be mutual cooperation, and at this point, I think it's only coming from the county. You're going to have a Los Osos update on the 27th of this month. I would hope at this meeting, since we haven't had one for a while, and now the project's in your hands, I would hope that we'd have some in-depth information about where we are with the water conservation program. Los Osos CSD is working on one. I don't want any duplication of efforts, a waste of funds on either part. Some in-depth information on where we are with the SRF, where we are with the USDA loan. After the staff report, I would hope that the supervisors would ask some questions before public comments, so the public doesn't have to come back the next week and respond to what you've said. Let's have this meeting be an open dialogue back and forth and see what can come out of this. My last 45 seconds, I'm going to change subjects completely. This Saturday in Los Osos is the second annual rummage sale for the Maxine Lewis Memorial Shelter. It's going to be held on the corner of Bayview Heights Drive, which is the 9th Street turn signal or stoplight, corner of Bayview Heights Drive and Ocean View. All of the proceeds from this rummage sale, it's a huge rummage sale. We have stuff coming in from all over the county. Will go towards the matching funds pool for the Needs and Wishes fundraiser on December 11th in Los Osos. So we're hoping all of the money raised this weekend will possibly be doubled in December. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Morgan.
Can I give a number to?
Yes, please.
If you have any questions or have anything to donate or need directions or anything dealing with the event, please call 528-5800. 528-5800. Thank you.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I want to thank Ms. Lippman and Mr. Greening for mentioning the March for Humanity that's scheduled for July 29th, 5 o'clock at Mitchell Park is where it will start, and then we'll move down to Farmers Market where we'll have a presence. The real purpose of this is to bring to the public's attention the consequences of cutting many of the programs that provide services to the underserved. Oftentimes it's more expensive, the consequences of cutting these programs, than operating the programs themselves. It will have a devastating effect on the underserved populations in San Luis Obispo County and throughout the state, and I'm speaking to what's being proposed at the state level for funding these programs, and I do want to encourage everyone to get out and participate in this event on July 29th, beginning at 5 o'clock at Mitchell Park.
Thank you.
Thank you.
That concludes the public comment portion of the agenda. We're going to move into our business items. Madam Clerk, if you'd introduce the first item, please.
Item B1. A presentation by the representatives of the U.S. Census Bureau thanking the County of San Luis Obispo for supporting and being a partner with the 2010 Census.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Priscilla Hansley. I am the Partnership Specialist for San Luis Obispo and Santa Barbara Counties. It's been a little while since I've seen everyone, so I am here to officially thank the County for their role as a partner with the U.S. Census Bureau. You were incredibly willing and enthusiastic, and it's funny because I've heard the phrase a few times, it's in our hands, during the public comment, and that was our motto throughout the census, it's in our hands. It was in our hands, and we did a very good job, so you should be very proud of the county as a whole. Our participation rate was 74%, which essentially means what we mailed back, what the Census Bureau mailed out, is what that percentage rate is what we got back out of what we mailed out, 74%. And that's very high. That's one of the highest in the state. So In addition to that, estimates were that we would be 5 points under that because of things like population growth and diversity in the community. So I'd also just like to mention and give a special thanks to the County Administrator's Office, Jim Grant and Vince Marici, because anytime I called and bothered them, they have always had a smile on their face and have been incredibly, incredibly helpful. So I just really appreciate your role as a partner, and I just would like to thank you, and hopefully I'll see you again in 10 years.
Can you tell us when this will come to conclusion and the final numbers will be presented?
That's initially the first question I had as well, and unfortunately, right now, I don't have any hard numbers that I've been given or that I can give out, because what they're doing is essentially following up with things like group quarters, which is where they enumerate prisons and nursing homes. They're also following up on anything, any information that they got that may have been conflicting or may have had a problem with it. So they're checking the validity, and after on December 31st of this year, the information has to be on the president's desk. After that, they'll release the information in basically data sets. So it'll be the largest information, or the most broad, if you will, information first. So national information, and then over the next 4 months, so into spring, it'll get more and more specific, and we'll get more county and tracked specific information. So.
Okay, thank you very much.
I just would like to mention as well that on census.gov, you can go and look in the American Community Survey, which we just had 1,500 households this year surveyed. They're starting to gain speed, and there's actually some really interesting information on there. So if anyone is curious, you can go to census.gov and check out FactFinder, and there's lots and lots of free information. I was really impressed with that website. So thank you again for all of your help, and I greatly appreciate it.
Thank you very much. Actually, we're number one, not ten. Thank you.
I wonder if Priscilla might stand by for just a second. Uh-huh. As information is available and as these different data sets come out and as we, the county, start to use this information, as we know we will in the coming year, will you be here as a liaison, or is your job wrapping?
I wish. I'm actually lucky to be standing here right now, I think. I should have been done maybe weeks before, but I was selected out of a few people to stay on to actually help put together a job fair for our local census employees out of the local census offices. And essentially, we don't have the budget for it, but we were lucky enough to get donations from people like the county, not necessarily money, but for venue space, things like that. And census employees that cover, Monterey, San Luis Obispo County, Ventura County, and Santa Barbara County are going to be coming for a census career day. So that's essentially what I'm working on. Unfortunately, after September 25th, I will no longer be working with the Census Bureau. This is a temporary position for me. But I do have contact information for a permanent employee who is not only with the Census Bureau in the sense that she's there all the time, but she is a master when it comes to finding the type of data that you're looking for amongst all of that free information that's on the website. I spent 8 hours basically in a seminar learning about how to find data on that website, and I didn't even touch the tip of the iceberg. So I'd be happy to pass that information along to you so that if you do have a specific question, you can call her up and she'll help you navigate, or whoever the person is in need of the information, she can help navigate through that for you, and it's free of charge. That's the amazing thing. So,
well, thank you. It's been my observation over the year or so that we've been gearing up and now winding down on this. It's gone remarkably well for the size of this undertaking, the scope that we, the ambition that we undertake to count every person in this county, in this nation.
It really is amazing. Yeah.
Compliments to your.
Oh, well, thank you. I mean, the operations side of it, I really have to give them most of the credit. The one thing I love about, everybody comes together, literally from the community. Most of the people that are working your local census office have not been working there for their entire life. You know, they came out of the community for a reason. And if they did encounter a challenge, they stood up and said, okay, let's do it, and took it upon themselves. I know we had some hiccups along the way, but they addressed those and moved on. So thank you again for, you know, just your participation and just for being there and being examples for the community. And we really appreciate it. It's important for the community. And the Census Bureau appreciates it, but I also personally really appreciate it. So thank you.
We thank you. And if you could stand by for a moment, I think there may be a question. I'm going to open it to the public. I have one request to speak. Mr. Greening.
Thank you. I'm Eric Greening, and I'd like to thank all of the workers who did this. I'd like to thank the Council of Governments for their support and giving the census kind of a place to center their activities. This is a constitutional requirement that we do this, and it has been part of our national life since we have been a nation, and it's very important to carry this out properly. Obviously, one of the important outcomes of the census population information will be redistricting at all scales, including in the county. And so my question is, what is the likely timeline of accurate population data from which the county can redistrict its supervisorial districts and any other changes that need to be made? The other decisions will be made elsewhere. We have a new initiative that has changed the way the state legislative seats are drawn, so that's a new commission. As I understand it, the legislature will still be apportioning the congressional seats in the state, and the estimate now is that California will likely have the same number of seats that it did before. It's not growing faster than the rest of the country. But we do have some local decisions relative to the five districts. And so I guess I have a two-part question on that. One is, when are we likely to have information on which we can accurately base such an action? And the other question is, are there specific criteria either in use or to be drawn up to anticipate that so that we get the districts that best serve the people of the county? Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Green.
As far as the timeline's concerned, I can't give an exact date on when specific information will be released. As I mentioned, I know that's a broad time period between January 1st and April. However, for that specific question, I've had people ask me certain things, and I've gone back and looked on our website to see when other data has been released in the past in order to get an idea of how big those data sets are and where and when each piece of information will be released. I can also check and see if they have estimated dates of when that data will be released. So.
Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. That presentation is concluded. We appreciate it. Thank you very much. Introduce the next item, please.
Next item is C1, a hearing to consider a resolution confirming amended assessments for the North Mesa Assessment District. Item was introduced June 8, 2010, and it's recommended approval and instruction for person assigned.
Good morning.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Jenny Brunick with the County Public Works Department. I do have an amendment on page 3 of the staff report under results. It reads, the subject assessment district was originally formed to provide road, it should read road and drainage improvements rather than water systems. The item is a routine annual process to place these charges on the tax roll. The assessment apportionment item deals with apportioning bond assessments from parcels that are being split or combined into new parcels. Today's hearing is for three purposes. The first one is to adopt the resolution confirming and ordering amended assessments. The second is to place the fee for preparing the amended assessments on the 2010-11 tax roll. And third is to direct the clerk to file the confirmed amendment assessment with the county auditor no later than August 10th, 2010. The fee for preparing the apportionment is $301 for apportionment of 9 or less new parcels, or $31 per each new parcel if there are 10 or more new parcels. The fee is part of the county ordinance, county fee ordinance adopted on November 24th, 2009. Notice of the assessment, apportionment, and charges involved were mailed to all the affected property owners on June 8, 2010. The required public notices have been met. They were on the Tribune June 25th. And this ends my staff report.
Thank you, Ms. Brunick.
I have no questions from the board, and I have no request to speak from the audience, so I'll bring it back to the board for action.
Mr. Chair, I move approval of staff's recommendation.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Sajjan, seconded by Supervisor Hill, to go with the staff recommendations 1, 2, and 3. Roll call, please, as amended on the results.
Mr. Sajjan?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Before we jump into the last item, we're going to take about a 10-minute break, and then we'll be back, and then we'll get started with C2. Please introduce the next item, please.
Next item is C2, a hearing to consider an appeal by the San Luis Obispo County Employees Association, SLOCIA, regarding the Management Representative's Human Resources Director's decision to accept the petition of recognition for employee organization from the San Luis Obispo Government Employees Association, SLOGIA, as the exclusive representative for trades, crafts, and services unit employees, and to set an election for recognition. It's recommended denial of the appeal.
Thank you. This is the way this is going to work. Anybody that's going to be a witness and or members of the public who will speak during the hearing will be sworn in by the clerk of the board. The management representative will present the item in the staff report. And then we're going to go to the SLOCIA as the appellant. They'll have up to 20 minutes to present their appeal. And then the SLOGIA Association, they'll have, as the real party of interest, will have up to 20 minutes to present their position. And then we will hear public comment and or testimony. All members, once again, must be sworn in by the clerk. SLOCIA will have 5 minutes to present concluding remarks, and then SLOGIA will have 5 minutes to present their concluding remarks. The management representative will have 5 minutes to present concluding remarks, and at this point, the board can ask any questions of any party or witnesses during the hearing. And then following the conclusion of the evidence, we will deliberate and make a motion regarding the findings and the decision. So with that, I'm going to ask at this point, anybody that is going to be a party to this, witness or members of the public who will speak, to stand and be sworn in by the clerk of the board. Nobody's going to speak?
Are you including advocates or just witnesses?
It says any parties, witnesses, and or members of the public.
No, my understanding, the facts are pretty much undisputed, so okay. We're not going to have any evidence other than the appellate brief that was submitted. By the way, my name's Dennis Hayes. I'm an attorney, and I'm general counsel for SLOCIA. So.
Okay, then I guess we don't need to go through all that.
Supervisor Meacham?
Yes, ma'am.
It might be if there's going to be a presentation at all by either side, we would ask that whoever's giving that presentation be sworn in. And we would also ask then that staff be sworn in, just so that our record is clear that everybody's been sworn in.
So, are we going to have any...
I don't know why I keep sitting down.
Either do I.
Advocates generally only advocate a position. I don't work for San Luis Obispo County Employees Association or for the county. I don't have any personal knowledge. I wasn't here when the events transpired. I'm going to advocate the position of the appellant, and based on the documents that are, and I think they're undisputed. I certainly would enter into a stipulation that the documents we've presented in the appeal are what they purport to be. If you want a representation like that, I would stipulate to that. If there's an objection as to the validity of the documents we've submitted in the appeal.
That's fine. We'll accept the stipulation and move forward.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I guess I need to go out and get my black robe on. Okay. Let's get started.
Okay. Thank you. Madam Clerk, could you bring up the presentation for me? Thank you, Chairman Meacham, members of the board, Tammy Douglas Schatz, Human Resources Director. We are here today to hear the San Luis Obispo County Employees Association appeal, and you will be determining if an election should be held for employees of the Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit, which is our bargaining unit, to vote on their representation.
By way of context, the labor relations in the county is guided by the county's employee relations policy, or the ERP, which is pursuant to the Myers-Milius-Brown Act. Specifically, some important components of the ERP to keep in mind during this hearing are that the ERP gives employees the right to join and participate in an organization of their own choosing. It allows employees to petition the county for decertification once a year in the month of January following the first full year of an organization's recognition. The ERP requires the county's management representative to determine the validity of any petition that is presented to her, or me in that case, and allows the management representative to establish any additional procedures that might be necessary to have a just and proper implementation of the policy, or just to be consistent with the rights of employees. So we do have some room to be flexible when it's necessary. And the employee relations policy requires that any petition include evidence of at least 40% of employee support to be valid. The background on this particular petition and appeal is as follows. In January 2010, the San Luis Obispo General Employees Association submitted a petition for decertification of the incumbent employee organization, San Luis Obispo County Employee Association. I need to point out an error in the staff report at this time. The staff report referred to SLOGIA as the San Luis Obispo Government Employee Association. That was actually an error. The correct name is San Luis Obispo General Employee Association, and I will be referring to them as SLOGIA, and SLOCIA as SLOCIA. SLOGIA also petitioned for an election to determine representation for the employees in Bargaining Unit 2, which is our Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit. The Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit contains 179 employees and is currently represented by the incumbent organization, SLOCIA. SLOCIA also represents three other units in our county, the Public Services Unit, Supervisor Unit, and the Clerical Unit, which is approximately 1,431 employees in total. On January 31st, 2010, SLOGIA actually submitted two petitions. One petition was to decertify the recognized employee organization, meaning SLOCIA, and a recognition of employee organization petition, which is a petition for themselves to be recognized. In their petition, SLOGIA stated that they wish to be, and I quote, recognized as the exclusive bargaining representative of the Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit to represent its members in their employee relations with the county, and that once recognized to decertify the organization currently representing Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit. The SLOGIA petition included signatures evidencing support by at least 40% of the Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit employees. 40% of 179 is 72. The SLOGIA petition attachments included the required documents pursuant to our employee relations policy. After reviewing the documents, I did request some written clarification from SLOGIA regarding two items, a constitution and a financial statement. Requesting clarification is allowed by the employee relations policy. And upon my request, SLOGIA responded in a satisfactory and timely manner. On January 31st, 2010, the same day SLOGIA submitted their petition to the county, SLOCIA submitted 90 employee support cards, hereinafter referred to as green cards because of their color, signed by their members. SLOCIA asserted that the employee signatures on those green cards demonstrate revocation of SLOGIA petition signatures. The green card consisted of the following elements. It had a statement that said, I hereby declare and reaffirm my support for the San Luis Obispo County Employees Association. It said that my signature hereon supersedes and voids any prior signatures, and contains a name, classification, department bargaining unit, and contact information, signature, and date of the person signing the card. So human resources staff and staff from the county clerk and recorder's office convened on February 3rd and 4th to review the signatures on this Logia recognition petition. After reviewing that, it was found that the petition contained 79 valid signatures, which is over 40% of the Trades, Crafts, and Services unit. Although the ERP does not address green cards or any card to revoke a signature on a petition, and it certainly doesn't require us to review those green cards, we chose to review the green cards and act as if it was something valid that we should look into. Of the 90 green cards submitted, 12 signatures on the green cards were the same as the signatures on a Logia petition. If we make the assumption that the green cards are a valid method to revoke a signature from a previously signed petition, of those 12, 7 signatures would have been excluded from the final count on the petition. 6, because the people who signed the green card signed the petition with a date prior to the green card signature. 1 person signed the petition on the same day as the green card. Although you could argue this either way, to be extremely cautious, we went ahead and removed that name from the Logia petition as well. The remaining 5 signed the petition with a date later than the green card signature. So because they signed the petition after the green card, we could not exclude them from the petition. After considering the green cards, and again, I want to repeat that we don't know if that is really appropriate or not, but after considering the green cards, 72 petition signatures were left, which still represents 40% of the Trades, Crafts, and Services unit, which meets the threshold for validation. On March 4th, I notified both parties that the petition was valid, and on March 11th, 2010, SLOCIA filed a timely appeal of that decision. In their appeal, SLOCIA contended that the county ignored provisions of the employee relations policy, that SLOGIA had failed to register as an employee organization and to petition for a decertification and representation election, that SLOGIA procured support through fraud and misrepresentation. In addition, SLOCIA stated that SLOGIA copied SLOCIA's name and website to intentionally mislead and confuse employees, and that the county acted in a biased, illegal, and retaliatory manner against SLOCIA, and that the county unlawfully discounted and ignored the green cards. The employee relations policy allows disputes such as this to go to mediation. SLOCIA requested mediation, and the county agreed to go forward with mediation. The state mediation and conciliation service provided a mediator, and we held that mediation on May 10th, 2010. The mediator was unable to settle the dispute and after one meeting did not recommend any further mediation sessions. As a result, on May 25th, 2010, SLOCIA filed this appeal to your Board of Supervisors and revised their appeal to contend the following issues. 1, that the petition failed to achieve the 40% threshold required by the employee relations policy. 2, that the petition submitted was untimely. 3, that the petition should be dismissed because the petitioner did not comply with the provisions of the employee relations policy. And 4, the petitioner procured its signatures through fraud and deception. There are several sub-issues within each of these 4 issues, and I will go through each one and give the county's response. The first issue, that the petition failed to achieve the 40% threshold. SLOCIA says that specifically 5 signatures should be disqualified from the petition, and they are as follows. 1, because the employee cannot be identified because of the absence of a printed name. There was a signature, but not the printed name. My response is that the signature was matched with a list of authorized employees of the bargaining unit. Then we were able to verify that signature by using another official human resources document containing the employee's signature. Therefore, we do not believe that signature should be removed. Felicia contends that two other signatures should be invalidated because the dates were altered on the petition. When the county received the petition, there were two dates that were crossed out. The year was crossed out. The year 09 was crossed out and replaced with the year 10. Because this petition was submitted in January of 2010, it is reasonable to believe that the signer of the petition accidentally wrote 09, crossed it out, and replaced it with a 10. It was submitted that way, and we do not believe the signatures are invalid because of it. Finally, Slocia states that two other signatures should be disqualified because they were dated January 30th, 2010, and the last business day of the month was Friday, January 9th, 2010. The employee relations policy does not state that a signer of a petition must sign that petition on a business day. The only date the employee relations policy refers to is that the petition be submitted within the month of January. As a result, I do not believe those signatures should be disqualified. Additionally, Slocia contends that the county opened its offices on Sunday, January 31st, 2010, for the sole benefit of the petitioner and to facilitate the decertification of Slocia. The ERP states that decertification petitions can be submitted only during the month of January following the first full year of recognition. The ERP does not state what the procedures are when the last day of the month falls on a weekend. As a result, and to be abundantly fair to the parties, I notified both parties of the hours of availability that human resources staff would be working on Sunday, January 31st. Neither party objected to having that date open, and both parties submitted documentation on Sunday, January 31st. Slogia submitted their petition. Slocia submitted their green cards. The second issue that Slocia brings forward is that the petition was submitted untimely. The employee relations policy says that decertification petitions can be submitted timely in two ways. One, there's two criteria that can be followed. The first is that it would be submitted only during the month of January in any year following the first full year of recognition, or during the 30-day period commencing 180 days prior to the termination date of an MOU having been in effect less than 3 years, whichever occurs later. Slocia has been the recognized employee organization for the Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit for more than 1 year. Therefore, the criteria set forth under number one applies. The petition was submitted during the month of January and therefore was timely. The third issue is that Slocia contends the petition should be dismissed because a variety of provisions of the employee relations policies were not followed. First, they state that the petition did not have the name of the existing unit nor the name of the incumbent organization. This is not accurate. In fact, the decertification petition included both the name of the unit and the name of the incumbent organization. Specifically, the following language was included in the petition. It is the desire of the San Luis Obispo General Employee Association, once recognized, to decertify the organization currently representing the Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit. And it also stated that the affected unit members are currently represented by the San Luis Obispo County Employees Association. Slocia states that the petitioner failed to file a detailed financial statement certified by a CPA. However, we have had prior county council opinion on this matter, and because Slogia is a new organization, they have no records for a CPA to certify. Instead, they presented bank statements, which are appropriate. Slocia contends that Slogia did not submit bylaws with its petition.
In fact, bylaws were submitted with the petition, and a copy of those bylaws were provided to SLOCIA on April 8, 2010. SLOCIA also contends that SLOGIA submitted documentation on January 31st and February 24th, which is outside the window period for a timely submission. I did request clarification from SLOGIA on two items, as previously stated. They filed timely on January 31st. The employee relations policy allows them to submit cures or to submit clarification upon request. They did so on February 24th, and that was in advance of the deadline I set for them of March 1st. Therefore, they were timely. The final issue, SLOCIA states that the petitioner procured its signatures through fraud and deception. Specifically, SLOCIA contends that the petition states all non-supervisory classifications and positions of the Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit caused employees to believe they were signing a petition to create a unit that already exists. We've already discussed this issue previously. The clarification of the unit on the petition was adequate. SLOCIA also states that the petitioner copied their name and website to intentionally mislead and cause confusion as to which organization employees were supporting. In fact, SLOGIA and SLOCIA are two different names, and the ERP does not give me the authority to approve or reject the name of any employee organization or to address the contents of a website. SLOCIA did not submit any evidence to me to show that any fraud occurred, and therefore I did not support that allegation. So that concludes my presentation. At the conclusion of this hearing, the board will decide, one, did SLOGIA file a timely petition for recognition of employee organization and decertification in accordance with our employee relations policy? If so, did the county's management representative correctly determine that the 40% threshold of employee support was satisfied pursuant to our ERP? And if so, should the county move forward with an election pursuant to our policy, Article 2, Section 4, Election Procedure? My recommendation is that your board find an order that the SLOCIA appeal is denied, that SLOGIA filed a timely and acceptable recognition and decertification petition in compliance with our policy, and that as soon as administratively feasible, conduct an election pursuant to the employee relations policy to allow the members of the Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit to vote on their representation for labor relations. And finally, to utilize the ballot that includes SLOCIA, SLOGIA, or no organization.
Okay, I have a question from Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tammy, just one quick clarification so I'm totally clear. On the green cards, 12 individuals signed both the petition and the green cards, but only seven, we determined, signed it at a date prior or the same date as the SLOGIA petition. Is that correct? How we got to the 7 from the 12?
Right. That they signed the green card. They signed the green card after the petition, making it a later date. So then it was the one that we took as valid.
Okay. Just wanted to be clear. Thank you.
Yes.
Okay. Any other questions at this point?
Just to confirm that documentation, I just wanted to ask Ms. Douglas-Schatz, on page 191 of our staff report, you have an analysis of those 12 signatures that were overlapping, and that is the piece of evidence that is your determination of which one should be accepted and which one is not.
That's correct.
Thank you.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Should this go to an election, does a simple majority determine one way or the other?
Yes, it does.
Okay.
Okay. With that, we'll go to the appellant. You have 20 minutes to present your appeal.
I have a PowerPoint as well, if we could put that on the board. Chairman Meacham, members of the Board of Supervisors, my name is Dennis Hayes. I'm an attorney. I'm general counsel for San Luis Obispo County Employees Association. This is an appeal of a decision made by the Human Resources Department to accept a representation petition. SLOCIA maintains that the county erred in accepting this petition because the petition does not comply with the employee relations policy. Therefore, this is an appellate body to determine whether Human Resources was correct in their decision or when they were wrong. I did not get the Supervisor Gibson referred to page 191. I do not have what you have before you. I was not provided that, but I did provide the county with a copy of my appeal. SLOCIA is a labor organization that represents the vast majority of employees of the county of San Luis Obispo for the purposes of collective bargaining. And on Sunday, January 31st, a newly formed organization, self-described as the San Luis Obispo Government Employees Association, who is the petitioner, filed a representation petition. And the petition states that the undersigned employees desire to be recognized as a bargaining unit and describes the proposed unit that it will consist of all non-supervisory classifications and positions in the trades, crafts, and service unit. And the Human Resources Department is correct. Article 2, Section 5D of the Employee Relations Policy, which has the unfortunate abbreviation of ERP, sets forth the minimum proof of support necessary to trigger that representation election, and that's 40%. So 40% of the employees in the established appropriate unit must state they no longer desire to be represented by the incumbent recognized employee organization. After the petition was filed, the county determined that 72 signatures were necessary to meet the minimum number needed for the 40%. And that's the county's own worksheet, and they performed this calculation. It's on Exhibit 6 of your of our appeal. And this is the handwritten version of what the county's Human Resources Department calculation was. And I have put it on a chart form to make it easier to read. 179 filled positions, 79 signatures were received. And so the SLOGIA obtained 79, but SLOCIA obtained 90 cards that showed their support, continued recognition by SLOCIA. Now, there were 12 individuals who signed both cards, and we can see the calculations at the bottom, which were also at the bottom here. They're a little cut off in the handwritten part on this PowerPoint. But it was, according to the county's calculations, 79 positions, and then they subtracted 12 for the overlapping, but then they added 5 back for those people who signed the green card first and then the petition later. So you're looking at the last representation by the employee of their support. And it seems obvious that prior to the time the petition's filed, an employee can withdraw support. It might be in the debate, the discussion of what things are going on, what promises are made, what representations are made. The employee changes his or her mind and withdraws support. People withdraw support for ideas, ballots, propositions, and candidates all the time. So do these employees have that right as well. So the green cards were submitted as proof of continued support, and these cards said they supersede and void any prior signatures. They declare and affirm their support of SLOCIA, and they want continued representation of SLOCIA. So they are effective revocations of prior support. So that's what you have. You have a minimum required of 72, and you have, according to HR's own calculations, 72 signatures, and yes, there are 5 signatures that should be rejected. 1 signature has no name, 2 signatures had an altered date, and 2 signatures were obtained after the deadline to file. Let's take a look at those one at a time. 1 signature with no name. The county unlawfully accepted an unrecognized signature, even the absence of a printed name. And here's the signature. No name was listed on the petition. And this matter wasn't submitted to mediation. It was appealed. The first level of appeal, according to the employee relations policy, is to appeal it to a mediator. And the mediator said to both parties that the county should not have accepted a signature. You need to write down the name on each individual. It's very well accepted that the name is required. And the petition must conform at the time it's filed. It has a deadline. And so it has to be valid on a face. The county can't conduct a post-filing investigation, interview employees, or accept facts after the deadline. It has to be valid on its face. And in this case, the signature was invalid at the time of the filing. There's also two signatures invalid because the dates were altered. And here, when you look at this, you can easily tell the old date written by a different person than the person who did the original date. Here you can see it on your boards, on your screens. These are the two dates, and one was crossed out and put it on the top. And you can see the top one, the person starts at the bottom and does a circle, a zero, clockwise starting at the bottom. The second, the original one started at the top, like most people do, and went around that way. These are two different people. And it wasn't a question of a person deciding, oh, the date was wrong. Somebody came along and altered that date. Altered dates are invalid. And if you discount the falsified dates, you don't get the required 40%. And there are two signatures that are obtained that should be disqualified because they were obtained on a Saturday, January 30th, and the last business day in January was 2010, was a Friday, January 29th. So the signatures here were obtained after the last business day to file the petition. And you can see it boxed in red. They're January 30th. The county opened its offices on Sunday, January 31st, a weekend day, it would otherwise be closed, for the sole purpose of giving extra days to the petitioner. This is really unprecedented. For one thing, there's a Public Employee Relations Board regulation, 32603D, which states an employer's domination of or the provision of assistance to an employee organization may constitute an unfair practice. And in this case, the assistance, the form of the assistance, was an additional but unscheduled business day was added for the sole benefit of the petitioner to help facilitate SLOSIA's decertification. Now, what county government would open its office on Sunday for the convenience of a county resident? Let's say a resident called up, I had all month to do this, but, you know, I ran out of time. Could you send someone down and open the county office on Sunday so I can bring it in and file it? No, I don't think you would afford that luxury to the citizens, and yet HR incurred the expense, the amount of money, the time, in order to facilitate this decertification. This is an era when the state and many local governments are closing their offices every Friday and having furloughs, and yet HR opens this office on Sunday, incurs the expense to provide the assistance. Clearly an unfair practice charge. It shows bias, it's unlawful, and it's obviously designed to do everything that HR can to help out the group that is contesting the incumbent. So really the petition is untimely because not only because the signatures were on a Saturday, but the entire petition is untimely for two reasons. First, the last business day in January to file a petition was Friday, January 29th. And absent this illegal assistance in the form of opening HR on Sunday, it would have been filed then, and it would have been short. Second, staff has misrepresented to you the holdings, the provisions of the employee relations policy. In reality, the petitioner had only 30 days in January to file the petition under the provisions of the employee relations policy. Now, the employee relations policy says, and the part that she left out, is in the absence of an existing MOU, a decertification petition may be filed in January. In absence of an MOU, it can be filed in January. That's all. We have here an MOU in place. So this provision doesn't apply. What provision does apply? If there is an MOU, the decertification petition must be filed in a 30-day period commencing 180 days prior to the expiration of the MOU. And since there is an MOU, that expired June 30th, 2010, the deadline was January 30, 2010. 30, the Saturday. Not 31, the day they opened it, but 30, because there is an MOU, they're using the wrong section. Under these rules, the first open window actually occurred January 1 to January 30th, 2009. Then the next open window occurs January 1 to January 30, 2010. Since they filed it on the 31st, it was too late. There's five reasons, in addition to everything I have said, that the petition did not comply with the employee relations policy. One, they failed to state the incumbent recognized employee organization sought to be decertified. And I have filed with the appeal a copy of their petition. It says petition, proof of employee support, and it has where they signed, you know. And there's a little paragraph above that these are what the employees read when they're signing this. And when they read it, there is no reference to San Luis Obispo County Employees Association. The petition that the employees sign does not comply with the requirement that you state the name of the organization that you're going to, that this thing is trying to decertify. It's an absolute requirement. The employee has to know, well, if I sign this, what's the effect of it? The effect is to, you are moving to decertify your current union. Doesn't say that. So that's a violation of the employee relations policy. The petition inaccurately states that the unit is one sought to be created. It says that the unit will consist of all non-supervisory classifications and positions of the trades, crafts, and service unit. Will. If you sign this, that's what will happen. Well, there's already an existing unit. It's not going to be created. It exists already. It's deceptive. It makes it think the person who's signing it, there's going to be creation of a new unit, and that they're not decertifying SLOSIA. Petitioner failed to file a detailed financial statement. The county's admitted that. It's a requirement. Petitioner failed to file bylaws. Here we do. I said there was undisputed facts. Apparently we have a disputed fact. SLOSIA has never gotten SLOGIA's bylaws. I requested it in writing. I never received it. Never was sent to me. Never was sent to SLOSIA. As far as I know, they don't exist. And the petitioner failed to file all required documentation in the window period. And this is the reference that there was something filed February 24th. So they don't put the name of the unit in. They don't comply with that part of the requirement. They don't say it's an existing bargaining unit. It's one that will be created. And at the time, there did exist one. They failed to do a financial statement, which is absolutely required by Article 2, Section 1, subparagraph K. They failed to submit that, and we have petitioner counsel's correspondence, which admits he didn't turn it in. And as far as I know, and I don't have any evidence of it, we've requested all the correspondence between everything that SLOGIA filed. We never received the bylaws. That's why I make that argument. I don't do it in a vacuum. I requested the information, and I didn't get it. So I had to assume that it wasn't produced. If it was produced, it wasn't turned over to SLOCIA. And there were things filed January 31st, and then other information February 24th. Oh, that's fine. I know there's a window period sometime in January, but go ahead. You can wait until February 24th and finish up the compliance of what needs to be filed at some point in January. The rules are that everything must be filed in the window period. February date is not anywhere described in the employee relations policy, and for all of these reasons, the petition must be dismissed. Members of the board, you hear the statement a lot. We live in an organization where, or in a system where we follow the rule of law, and it's very important to follow the rule of law. And it's important for this body and the county to follow the rule of law, because once you make exceptions, then you leave yourself open to claims of discrimination, retaliation, illegal conduct. But if you follow the rules, then you can avoid that. Your mission statement says it's to create policies for the benefit of the citizens. You know, part of that is also to enforce the policies. There is not the flexibility that exists to that the county says. There's not a flexibility to go through the extra expense of opening an office on a Sunday in order to facilitate decertification. There's not a flexibility to have people who sign documents but don't put their name on it. They don't have the flexibility to ignore the employee relations policy by failing to get the financial statements or failing to do the bylaws or all the other things that have done here that the Human Resources Department has done. It's no surprise that they are urging you to support their decision. What I'm urging you to do is comply with the employee relations policy. And you may say, well, what's the harm? Go ahead, have an election. You know, let's see who wins. But you know, if it was a county ordinance, somebody collected signatures to put it on the ballot, and you were short or they were late, it wouldn't go on the ballot. Rule of law. Anybody wants to sue the county, they have to file a Government Claims Act in 6 months. 6 months and one day, you're out. You can't sue the county. You got to bring an action within 1 year in the statute of limitations. 1 year and one day, you're out. Does it seem harsh? Well, yeah. But you have to draw the line somewhere. And the line is drawn in the employee relations policy. You have to follow that line, and in that way, you always have a basis for your decisions. It was in the employee relations manual, or employee relations policy, and we followed it. Follow the rule of law, enforce the employee relations policy, and grant this appeal. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Okay, we don't need that. If you want to clap and shake hands, you can do it out there. We're not going to have that in here. Okay, I'm going to go to the SLOGIA folks. If anybody is going to be speaking in their behalf, I don't... Yeah, I have somebody there. Okay.
Good morning.
Good morning.
My name is Larry Katz. I represent SLOGIA. We do not have a presentation, but I would like to respond to three of the points that Mr. Hayes brought up. Would this be the appropriate time, or do you want to wait till after?
Let's go now.
Okay. Well, first of all, we believe that we followed the rules and, more important, the spirit of the employee relations policy. Mr. Hayes brought up three points that I wanted to address. First, there was one signature that didn't have, it wasn't printed, it was signed. And he referred to a mediation, and he referred to a mediator. He said that the mediator, supposedly during his conversations with him, said that he would reject that one. Just like you people have, the Board of Supervisors has closed session, mediations are the same. Those statements are confidential. Mediation statements are confidential, and in no way or manner what a mediator says during a mediation should ever be used in any other proceeding. If the mediator was here and present, he would be very upset that Mr. Hayes brought his name up. I didn't bring his name up, but his position as a mediator and is trying to use it in this proceeding. Also, it's clearly hearsay. He could have called witnesses. If he wanted to bring the mediator here and call him as a witness and say, did you make that statement? We have no idea how that statement was made and what context that statement was made. So the signature, as the county presented, they recognized who the signature was. They went and compared it to another county document, and it was clear who that signature was, and it was authentic. Second of all, there's nothing in the ERP which states that once a petition has been signed that it can be voided. Yes, there are green cards, and the green card can say, I still support, in this case, Lucia. But really, that's what an election's for. If somebody if somebody signs our petition, and then someone signs a green card, and then somebody signs our petition again, and we just keep going back and forth till we get to January 31st, somewhere along the line, that person signed our petition saying that they supported it. Now, if they want to change their mind down the road, if we have an election on this matter and they want to change their mind, they have every right to vote for whichever, either our party, SLOCIA, or none of the above is going to be listed on the ballot. That's when it's going to be decided. So this back and forth where I put this in and then they put that in. The other part is the county requested, and they requested of me as the representative, some clarification after we submitted our documentation. The ERP doesn't say everything has to be submitted during the month of January, and if there's any clarification, sorry, we can't ask that question because the time's up. It doesn't refer to that. They wanted some clarification. They asked me to have that presented to them by March 1st. I submitted it in a timely manner way before March 1st. So that point doesn't go anywhere either. All we're requesting here is that the employees have the opportunity for an election to decide who they want to represent them on their labor relations. And being in, I think that Tammy's presentation was perfect. It explained our position out. We don't have to be redundant and go over it again. We think we filed the proper paperwork. We did it in the spirit of the ERP. The ERP is not a perfect document. You have to look at the spirit of it a bit, and we support the recommended action. Thank you.
Thank you. I have no other people that have requested to speak on this, so we'll go back to the 5 minutes on Ms. Lucia, if you have any concluding remarks.
Well, I don't have 5 minutes of rebuttal to what was just said, but just briefly, there's a difference, I think, between some flexibility and completely ignoring the employee relations policy, and that's what was done here. There are so many things wrong with this petition. It wasn't just a question of flexibility. It's wholesale invalid. The argument that an employee does not have the right to withdraw its authorization when that employee gets additional facts is ludicrous at best. Any individual, any citizen who participates in our democratic process has the ability to withdraw support of any measure, any candidate, any issue, when they ever they so desire, and that's well recognized. And there's no that I haven't seen any support, any points and authorities, any briefing that holds to the contrary. In fact, it's a Public Employee Relations Board case, Antelope Valley, that goes back years that says employees. The requirement is that they have to clearly state that they no longer are supporting the decertification certification of the rival organization, and they continue to support. So you can have it, but it has to be a clear and unequivocal statement of a revocation of a prior support, and certainly the green cards satisfy that. And for all those reasons, I'd like the board to take this under submission, grant the appeal as being a violation of the employee relations policy, and thank you for your time.
Thank you, sir. We'll go back to Slogia. Do you have any concluding remarks? You have 5 minutes.
Very brief. 12 days before the deadline of January 31st, we started the petitions. We gathered 40% of the signatures prior to January 31st. With or without the green cards and that issue, forget that issue. We have 40%. Your ERP says 40% takes it to an election. We got 40% in that 12-day period, and now we want to go to an election, and we think that's the just and right thing to do. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Okay, I'm going to go back to management.
comment on Mr. Hayes' allegation that the mediator told us to reject that signature. If he had that private conversation with Lucia, that did not make its way to our private room. We did not meet all as a group. The mediator did not tell us to reject that signature. On the contrary, we discussed the, how we determined what signature it was, and we got no negative comment from the mediator. With regard to opening on Sunday, I think I've already explained very clearly what my thinking was with regard to opening on Sunday. That did not cost the taxpayers any money. An exempt employee came and opened the building for a few hours. So we did that because this is something that only occurs once a year, and the last day of the month was on a Sunday, and we thought it was a reasonable. So Sia did not object when they showed up on Sunday with their green card. I do not believe I've misrepresented the employee relations policy in any way.
Thank you. I do not believe I've misrepresented the employee relations policy in any way in this presentation, and I know council had assisted in putting this presentation together, and I believe they would comment if they thought that I had misinterpreted it. We did produce bylaws for SLO SIA to look at on, I believe I had the date of April 8th. We're regretful that they did not receive them. Had we known they didn't receive them, we would have produced them again. And finally, I'm calling upon council to address the green card issue because it is a legal issue that council looked into. I think that she has something to add.
Thank you. Rita Neal, Assistant County Counsel. We did take a very serious look at the green cards, and there was some support, legal support, to not consider the green cards at all. There is a case out of the Personnel Relations Board entitled Antelope Valley Healthcare District. In fact, it was a case that was cited to us by SLO SIA, and that case indicates that when employees do submit cards giving their support, they have to unequivocally declare their intent to revoke their support. So when, if you look at the green cards in this instance, those green cards don't say, I hereby revoke my signature that was listed on a petition for SLO SIA. Having said that, though, so we could have rejected them completely, but in the spirit of the employee relations policy and trying to give the employees their choice of representation, we advised that we would go ahead and accept them on a Sunday and that we would take a very serious look at what it was that the employees were asking us to do, who they wanted to be represented by. So we did accept the green cards in order to give the employees deference.
Okay, so in summary, the threshold of 40% signatures was met by SLO GIA, and I still recommend to your board that we move forward with an election.
Okay, I have a few questions here from the board. I'm going to go to Supervisor Hill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Tammy, and maybe Rita will weigh in on this too. On the Sunday issue, is it, and partly because this is the threshold is so close here, in terms of the number of signatures that was required to meet this. Is it common that we would be open on a Sunday to, I mean, is, I don't know if this has been done before in the county. Was this communicated to the folks who wanted to form SLO GIA as an opportunity to, I mean, had they turned in most of their work and they needed to turn in some more? Was it also communicated to SLO SIA on this Sunday? How is it, I mean, typically, of course, our building is locked on Sunday. I'm not concerned about whether it was, you know, we spent any money one way or another. You know, if a salaried employee comes in, that's fine. But that is it unusual, and certainly SLO SIA is making a point of that.
Well, first of all, we don't have an awful lot of history to draw upon. I believe that, and correct me if I'm wrong, that besides this particular petition that we received this year, we have only been through this in this county one other time, and that was last January. so, you know, we just did the best we could. We looked at January 31st being a Sunday and said, you know, it's reasonable to come in because it's not like Slogia or Slocia said, oh, here's part of our green cards or here's part of our petition, we need more time. That did not happen. In fact, I had a conversation with both parties prior to the 31st, and both parties asked, what is your intention? Are you considering the cutoff date to be Friday? And we talked about it amongst ourselves and decided that we would tell both parties no, they could submit all documents on Sunday. So all documentation from both parties came in on that one day on Sunday.
So it was clearly communicated to both parties that,
yes,
that you would take it up till Sunday because they had inquired to see if Friday was when it was
going to be the actual date. Yes, that's accurate.
Okay. And another question I had, one of the contentions also made by Mr. Hayes is that the petition that employees signed lacked some of the critical information, such as that signing this was to decertify to agree with the certifying their unit from Slocia. I wondered if you did not respond to that. I wondered if you could respond to that.
Sure. The petition actually contains all of the elements, and it was in my presentation, and we could pop it back up. Or, Dory, do you by chance know what page it was on in the... Okay. I'm going to pop my presentation back up.
If I may, Mr. Chair, I have the same question, and what the petition preamble does say is it refers to it rather than Slocia, but incumbent representative, which, and it states that twice in the preamble. So when I read it, it was clear to me they were talking about Slocia. So is that interpretation adequate?
Let's keep a little order here. Let's go ahead.
Sure. Okay. I don't know if I can get...
You could look at any of the 16 pages that have the actual, like 162 has a copy of the petition.
Yeah, that's easier to look at. Thank you. Staff report. The staff
report.
Could
apropos of that. 162.
Just a second. Mr. Gibson?
And my question to staff is whether the pages where the employee's signatures appear is the entirety of the petition. I'm looking on page 24, which seems to be more information. It's called Decertification of Recognized Employee Organization, and I'm wondering if those signature pages were only part of the petition construed as the whole.
Right. I mean, every petition, they had to keep adding pages onto a petition, just like any other petition. So there's a cover page that describes very clearly that they are trying to decertify Slocia. It actually spells out the name San Luis Obispo County Employees Association, and the Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit is clearly spelled out. We'll try to locate it in our packet real quick, if you don't mind.
Okay. Have you heard on that issue? Thank you. Article 2, Section 5B requires the petition must state, and I'll quote, the name of the established appropriate unit and of the incumbent recognized employee organization sought to be decertified as the representative of the unit. With all due respect, every decertification is trying to decertify the incumbent. That doesn't give you any information, and it certainly doesn't comply with your employee relations policy, which says the name of the established appropriate unit must be in there. And the name is clearly not in there. And number two is, I don't know if there's any other documents that were filed, but I draw the board's attention to the employee proof of employee approval and that little paragraph that doesn't mention the name. And this is what the people sign. So if you want to show support, what are they supporting? And I think that's a good reason they put the in the policy that you have to put the name in there. Maybe this person who's signing this doesn't want to decertify Slocia, and you have to provide that information to let them know the consequences of their signature. Incumbent, it's not enough under your policy. It's not enough.
Okay.
Can I comment on that?
quickly. This is amazing to me that, I mean, go ahead. I'm going to make my comments later. Go right on ahead.
Well, it says incumbent twice. People know who their organization is. It's funny, but in their green cards, it doesn't say anything about our organization in our green card in their green cards. It doesn't even say anything about SLOCIA. But it says SLOCIA, but it doesn't say SLOGIA. So their green cards do the same as what ours do, except that we say incumbent twice. People know what their union is. Also, in this county, I've gone through two other decertifications. This was essentially the same form that was used at that time. We relied on the fact that the county accepted those the other two times, and that it would be the practice that this would be accepted this time. I don't think there's any fraud involved, that people didn't know who they would be decertifying. They knew it was their union.
If I could follow up with it.
Yes,
maybe with Ms. Neal. Since Mr. Katz was involved in the previous one that this board heard in the Sheriff's Department, was the petition similar in the sense that it referred rather than, I guess, DSA, it referred to an incumbent, and we accepted that as a reasonable...
Yes, Rita Neal, Assistant County Counsel. I believe it's almost the exact same wording as the ASLO petition, if you will. And one thing that we advised the board at that time, and I would remind the board that, yes, our ERP is not perfect. And what we look for and what we advise the management representative is that we look for substantial compliance in order to carry out the wishes of our employees.
Thank you.
And just reiterating again, if you look at the green cards, if you want to use Mr. Hayes' logic, it says that they are, well, it doesn't say they're revoking, but it's implying that they want to revoke. It didn't say that. But revoking what? Any and all. They didn't say so SLOGIA. I mean, you can't have your cake and eat it too. They're making one argument that we had to say the magic words SLOCIA, but then they don't say SLOGIA.
Okay, Mr. Patterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. My questions were answered.
I'm sorry, did you finish, Mr.
Yes,
Hill?
Thank you.
Okay. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you. Questions of staff. Going back to page 24 of our staff report, what it's labeled attachment to decertification of recognized employee organization. Page 25 is recognition of employee organization. What role do those documents have in any of this?
Well, both documents were required in this case because the SLOGIA wanted two things. They wanted to decertify SLOCIA, and then they wanted to be recognized to represent the Trades, Crafts, and Services Unit.
So do we assume then that the signature pages, which start somewhere down, they're sort of disconnected. Are those signature pages connected with these two documents in some fashion?
They were submitted that way, yes.
Okay.
So, they're all part of the package that people see that they're decertifying, people see that they're looking to be recognized.
Hold it a second.
Beyond the scope of the witness's knowledge, this individual didn't take this document around and have it signed. Not to my knowledge, he has it.
Sir, just a second, please.
Okay.
Go ahead and finish.
Okay. Well, I'll let Tammy finish. That's it. The other question I have is Mr. Hayes was making an argument later in his presentation about January not being the proper month to file this action. And I'm looking on page 15 of our staff report where section 5 of the ERP is listed. And as you pointed out, Ms. Douglas-Schatz, in your presentation, there's an or here in the first sentence of that section. It's a lengthy sentence with an or in the middle of it, so that the decertification petition regarding an incumbent employee organization be filed during the month of January or during the 30-day period commencing 180 days prior to the termination date of an MOU, then having been in effect less than 3 years. So the question is, at the point that you received this petition to decertify SLOCIA, how long had the SLOCIA MOU been in effect?
It had been in effect in excess of 3 years.
Okay.
But we do not believe that that's the proper criteria to use, because it says in the first criteria, it says that the petition will be filed in the month of January following the first year of recognition, and SLOCIA has been recognized in excess of a year.
So, but I mean, on both counts, you're ignoring, you're basically saying everything after that or is not applicable to this.
Yes.
Okay. Those are my questions.
I'm going to go to County Council.
Sure.
Yes, Rita Neal. And to correct something that was made in one of the presentations, this particular MOU for Trades and Crafts does not expire until July or June 30th of 2011. I think the presentation indicated it expires.
No, we took it out. No, the presentation. We took that out.
You took indicated that their MOU for Trades and Crafts expires in 2010. It does not. It expires in 2011. So that goes back to the timing of when a petition has to be filed within the month of January. It doesn't say in the absence of an MOU. It just says within the month of January or 180 days prior to the expiration. So that's the clarification for the board on that.
Okay. I don't have any other requests to speak, but we're going to take 10 minutes and we'll come back and come to determination on this. Okay, if we could please reconvene, and we'll see if we can come to a conclusion on this. County Council, have any further comments? Staff? Supervisor Hill?
Well, are we in the deliberation mode?
We're in the deliberation mode now.
Well, my sense of it, Mr. Chair, is that the objections raised by Mr. Hayes, to my mind, really ultimately amount to technicalities and don't undermine the substantial compliance. Very first page of our employee relations policy talks about employees of the county having the right to join and participate in an organization of their own choice. We've had this before us before. It's always unfortunate when there's an internal division, but it seems the only way to remedy such is to allow them the democratic right to vote. I do think that ultimately that's the best way to deal with this, and certainly if there is a change of mind from members, then that will come out in the vote. So I would move that we deny the appeal and move forward with the determination to accept the petition for recognition of the SLOGIA organization.
I'll second that.
Okay.
Mr. Sajjan?
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. One second. I'm going to go to County Council before I jump over.
Yes, Rita Neal, Assistant County Counsel. I wanted to make sure that in your motion, perhaps staff could put the findings back up, and we'd ask that your motion include the findings.
Okay. I'm going to go to Supervisor Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. On a personal note, I hate to see this split because together you are much stronger and speaking by one voice. It is here go in different directions, but that's the price we pay for democracy. If that's your wish, so be it. You still have one opportunity, and that will tell us exactly where you stand. And I'm here to honor your request. For that, I will support the motion.
Mr. Gibson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'll echo Mr. Shajian's comments on a split that has been identified here. We have yet to find out what the resolution of this, and speaking to Mr. Hill's comments as well, I think we do err on the side of allowing our employees their choice, and so I did look very carefully at the letter of the employee relation policy, not a perfect document. Similarly, the petitions and the green cards are not perfect documents. But on the net, in terms of the important points, I don't see anywhere in our employee relations policy where we speak to business days versus the month of January, and I think the month of January is the correct one. I don't see the policy speaks to proof of employee support. It doesn't speak to printed names. It doesn't speak to dates, and I think the date corrections are the only logical conclusion could be that someone hadn't quite caught up with the change to the 2010. And I don't hear any contradictions to staff's indication that both organizations knew the accommodation of being open on the 31st of January. I would point out that as The county does accommodate our constituents by opening on the weekends to accept votes in elections, and so I don't think that that's outside the I don't think that's outside the realm. So on the net and seeing the issues that are before us in this question, I think that we have substantial conformance with the we certainly have conformance with the spirit. Should we pass this motion, I think we have very close to complete conformance with the letter as well. So I'm comfortable based on the findings, and for appreciate counsel's recall of the findings. I think that these findings are important. There's the findings really are in number two, and as I related in my comments here as to the compliance with the letter, that that the Slogia petition does conform on those matters. The others, as I look at three and four, those are directions of this board that I think are appropriate based on the finding that the petition was properly filed.
And I do amend my motion to include the findings.
Okay, sure.
Mr. Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I concur with my colleagues. I do find it unfortunate, really, that you know, we are looking at the creation of another bargaining unit and the splitting of our largest unit in the county. And I do think, though, that we did have substantial compliance with the process, and that the employees ought to be given the opportunity to make the determination themselves. So I will support the motion.
Okay. Well, I think my colleagues have pretty much summed this up. I think that for the most part, when there was determinations suggested that people didn't know what they were signing, I find that very, very difficult to believe. I mean, there's two different groups that have obviously said that there's certain things that they want to do. Well, they're going to sign something in that regard. So I find that, I don't want to call it an excuse, but I find that not to be a valid concern from my standpoint. I do, as my colleagues have suggested, that it's always the voice of the people. The folks that want to have a say in something should have a say in something. So with that, I'm going to call to the question.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Sajian?
Aye.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Thank you. Would you introduce our final item, please?
We have D1, a consideration of a memorandum of agreement with the Napomo Community Services District for the district's sphere of influence update, 4th District. It's recommended approval.
We'll just take a moment and let folks clear out and okay. Mr. Stevenson, are you presenting this?
I am doing this.
Morning, Chairman Meacham and members of the board. Chuck Stevenson, planning staff. The matter before you today is a memorandum of agreement between the Napomo Community Services District and the County of San Luis Obispo, and this is relative to the Local Agency Formation Commission's update of the Municipal Service Review and influence for the NCSD. The LAFCO organization updates the MSR and the sphere of influence every 5 years. And we already have a memorandum of agreement between the county and the NCSD that was originally completed in 2004. This being time for its five-year review, approximately, we're bringing back the MOA to your board, mainly because staff had a couple of concerns that were brought out. This is the report from the LAFCO organization, and I mentioned in the report relative to the sphere of influence, to the size of the sphere of influence, that the district does not, I'm just quoting from here, does not currently have adequate and reliable water resources available to meet the needs of the sphere of influence over the next 20 years. And so staff was a little concerned with the size of the sphere of influence relative to that comment, and then met with the NCSD staff several times to seek clarification to the memorandum of agreement that would explain what their intent was in having that larger area. And they have done so, and that can be found on page D111 and D112 in your staff report. This is a portion of the Exhibit A provisions. So very clearly, in our view, clarifies what their intent is for that. Basically, it is to enable the district to better manage the water in that area. As you know, the area is outside the urban area. It is zoned residential rural in most cases. And this is allowed subdivisions in there, like a cluster subdivision, would require community water. Now, our preference is, and county policy is, that type of subdivision would seek water from a established district like the NCSD rather than a mutual water company. So in recognition of the district's proactive activities in trying to stabilize the basin and manage the basin, we believe that they're in a better position to provide water to those kinds of projects in the area. Staff was concerned that this not be inadvertently a signal to fuel general plan amendments by property owners, and so there are assurances in here from the district as well that they have no intent of providing water or sewer to those areas for increased development. It's really primarily focused at managing the basin in a better way. So we believe that the provisions in the memorandum of agreement are much clearer now and satisfy us. Even though the sphere of influence is larger than we would normally like to see, we really believe that the intent is to manage the basin in a better manner, and so we support that. I would note that in the audience today is two members of the Napomo Community Services District, Jim Harrison, who's the chair, who can speak, as well as Mike Wynn. But I believe that more or less summarizes our comments. Just want to point out, this is the sphere of influence, which is depicted by the gray and pink shaded areas. If you look toward the middle in that map, you'll see a heavier black line, which denotes the urban reserve line. So, and I would also mention that there are some areas that are being withdrawn from the sphere of influence, and those are shown in crosshatched areas. I can show it with my pointer here. This lower area 4, which is now in really strawberries, is being withdrawn from the sphere. There's an area to the north of the Willow Road extension, which is being removed from the sphere, and I believe a couple of other small areas. But so we're, based on our cooperation and work with the district staff, we're satisfied, and we would then recommend that your board adopt the proposed memorandum of agreement between the county and the Napomo Community Service District. And that would conclude my comments.
Mr. Patterson?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Stevenson, if you can go back to that graphic, the southern portion of that district that you mentioned is currently planted in strawberries. That's being recommended for removal. We do have an area beyond that that I think is currently served by the NCSD, but is that going to stay? So we have sort of a leapfrog effect there. Is that what we're seeing?
It is presently served by the district, so it will stay in there, but the intent is just, and I think Mr. Wynn or Mr. Harrison can speak to that, the intent is just to allow the continued use of the sewer interceptor.
And what about water for that area? No, or
I think they can speak to that as well.
Okay, thank you,
Mr. Sajjan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I hear what you're saying about the extended area for their sphere of influence, but having worked closely with NCSD, it gives me the peace of mind that this is to do a better job managing the water rather than it going to the other parties who have not the same responsibility to the taxpayers and the voting and the reality of the existence of the water rather than maybe their shareholders and the level of responsibility is not the same as the locally elected officials. So I have absolutely no problem to see
see this happen in the extended areas of to go under their sphere for the purpose that gives the community better control for the future of their water use.
Okay, I'm going to go to the public. I have Mr. Harrison and Mr. Wynn. Good morning.
Good morning, Chairman Leach and members of the board. My name is Jim Harrison. I am presently the president of the Pomona Community Service District, and basically I want to thank staff, your planning department, your legal counsel for meeting and working with the NCSD to develop this MOA and to make it agreeable to both agencies. Answer your questions, though, that you just stated. There will be an island at the end of this area that's served by water and sewer from the Napoleon Community Service District. The only thing in there now is a development that is in receivership. The banks, actually the Federal Deposit Insurance Company now owns it. So someday that may come out and there may actually be people living there. There's no one living there, although there's a number of houses that have been constructed, and we have set 10 meters down there. And there's also six houses right there next to it that someday may come into our district, but right now we don't have plans to do that, but they have problems with water and sewer. Those six houses have existed since the early 60s. And outside, I just want to say thank you, and if you've got any questions, I'll try to answer them. And encourage you to approve this.
Thank you, Mr. Harrison. Mr. Wynn.
I'm Michael Wynn from the Napoleon Community Services District. You know, when we initiated this memorandum of agreement in 2003, we understood then, as we do now, this is not a conventional MOA such as you would have with a city. Cities have planning powers and we don't. And so this document, for our purposes, is just to show very clearly what kind of intentions we have so that both we and you can plan in an orderly way without confusion or ambiguity. The community at the time was very nervous about us. They thought the NCSD was going to run sewers out into the RR areas, put in a whole lot of high-density building out in that area, and basically destroy the rural areas that we had. And we did this as much for the purpose of helping the community understand as we did for your staff and our staff to understand. We've worked really well. Mr. Stevenson worked with us even back then, and David Church, who's now executive director from LAFCO, we worked hard, and we came up with what we thought was a good product. We think this update is an improvement. It's clearer. Statements that said shall and will, which really aren't enforceable, were toned down to something more intentional. But our board did unanimously approve it, and we urge you to do the same. By the way, the area that's taken out on the south end of the mesa there that you saw that was originally included is now growing strawberries, and they're making about $40,000 a year per acre off of those strawberries. We don't think you can build houses and make that kind of profit these days. So we think that this current use is highly defensible, and we're not trying to send any messages to anybody that we want to change that. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Wynn. Okay, I'll bring it back to the board. Mr. Gibson?
Thank you. Actually, I have to make a call to my citrus consultant and get those orange trees out. That's interesting. I wonder if Mr. Stevenson can put the graphic back up. First of all, I'm supportive of this memorandum of agreement. I think it is a fine document. But I'd just like to make a couple comments on the sphere of influence, which is the pink area there. But I direct colleagues' attention to this slide, which is, to say the least, a complex situation. You have a service area in the dark gray, which exceeds the urban reserve line. It has discontinuous pieces. It is the product of a lot of decisions made over a large number of years. And at one point, I had my concerns as to what the sphere of influence outside a district which isn't proposing to extend services anywhere, just how that should be configured. I would note for colleagues that we're not making a decision on the sphere of influence. That's a LAFCO decision that's actually going to be taken up on Thursday. So I would note that should the district wish to provide any services outside its existing service boundaries, they'd have to do that at this point either through annexation or through an outside user agreement, which would again be a LAFCO decision and subject to
Vertese, Knox, Hertzberg, and analysis of LAFCO. My comfort in where we are in this largely rests with this memorandum of agreement, and I've spoken on a number of occasions at LAFCO is that that document is really far more important than the designation of the sphere. The sphere is really just a line on the map indicating where something is intended to happen, but without any specificity. This is a great MOU in terms of being very explicit about intentions of the district, intentions of the county, and I think it really is a definite step forward in our ability to plan in a situation that's already complex and somewhat difficult. So at an appropriate time, I will be supporting this MOU.
Patterson.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I, too, will support the MOU. My comment is that I do think we need more of these. The county has MOUs with most of the incorporated cities, but we run into issues where there are misunderstandings and goals that don't mesh between the service providers in our unincorporated cities and the county's land use objective. So I appreciate the fact that Napomo CSD has worked with our planning department to develop this so both entities have some clarity on the future of their communities, and I would like to see more of these in the future.
And I'll go to the supervisor of the district, Mr. Sajan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, I want to thank our staff and LAFCO staff and members of NCSD for bringing this forward and serious cooperation. With that, I move we approve this staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
I have a motion by Supervisor Sajan. Second.
Excuse me, before you take final vote, may I make a point? The clerk just made reference to a I'm on page D111, item 3. We'd like to strike a couple of words in here. In the middle of that, it refers to, says the district and the county shall work cooperatively regarding but not limited to issues and policies related to water, its supply, legal entitlements for the area within the Napomo Mesa Water Conservation Management Area and Napomo Valley as shown in Exhibit F. We did not include an Exhibit F for that. We acknowledge that that's what we're going to do, but we don't have an Exhibit F. I would just like to line out as shown in Exhibit F.
I'll include that into the
thank
motion.
You. Sorry for the interruption.
And second, accept that. Absolutely. Okay, I have a motion by Supervisor Sajan, second by Supervisor Patterson to go with the memorandum of agreement and with the strike on D111.
Mr. Chair, before we call for the question, I want to be sure that NCSD has the understanding of what we just did. Is that clear, if I may?
Yes.
Is that clear, Mr. Nguyen or Mr.
It's an exhibit that wasn't in.
Yeah, there's no exhibit F, and it's but it shows that there is, and we're just taking that off because they had the question mark on their faces. Okay. Thank you.
Appreciate that.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
You've got to chase him down, Jim.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay, we good? Roll call.
Mr. Sajan?
Yes.
Mr. Patterson?
Aye.
Mr. Hill?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
And Mr. Meacham?
Yes. Thank you. I have no request to speak on closed session. Mr. Jensen?
About an hour.
1 hour. And we will return to report out.